from KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, some pre-Thanksgiving inspiration from one of California's great chefs. Central Valley native Tracy Desjardins shares a few favorite holiday recipes. Get ready for chanterelles and chestnuts. Plus, heritage turkeys, just like the pilgrims ate.
They're similar to pigs in that they're just really interesting in how they relate to each other, how they relate to their environment, and they're just alive and vibrant.
Also, persimmons. Not the most profitable crop, but one Japanese-American family farm is still growing 9 varieties of the orange fruit.
I guess a lot of it is tradition. When your family does something and has a business, you kind of hate to see it go away.
Finally, the secret to great pie crust. Not a single calorie involved in listening. It's the California Report. Well, plenty of amateur cooks will be digging up crumpled, food-stained, and torn family recipes this holiday season. But when a 2-time James Beard award-winning chef offers to share a few, well, who can resist? San Francisco chef Tracy Desjardins' Thanksgiving menu incorporates her childhood, spent in California's Central Valley. Lisa Morehouse got the tough assignment of visiting Desjardins in her home kitchen for this profile.
I asked Tracy Desjardins to demonstrate one favorite Thanksgiving dish for this story. But when I get to her house, she's making 4.
One dish.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving. Can't do one dish for Thanksgiving. For God's sakes, you're lucky I didn't do like 10.
I'm not complaining.
She starts with stuffing, preparing the mirepoix, or vegetable mixture of celery, onions, and leeks.
Putting in the onion. Kind of a classic stuffing, but with an addition of gizzards and chanterelles and roasted chestnuts. So I'm going to sweat the mirepoix in just a little bit of butter until it's nice and soft.
Desjardins readily admits she's always been a bit over the top when it comes to food. She started baking at age 3 and was soon micromanaging her cousins over cookie batter.
And I was always yelling at everybody about folding the flour in gently because otherwise it was going to make the cookies tough. And they just thought I was insane. They hated me.
She comes to that obsession honestly. Growing up in a family of rice farmers in the Central Valley town of Firebaugh, Desjardins learned to cook from all 4 grandparents who lived nearby.
My Mexican grandpa used to make menudo, which he was relegated to do in the garage.
Desjardins' grandmother, who made fresh tortillas every day, didn't want the smell of tripe cooking in the house. On the other side of the family, Desjardins' Scandinavian grandmother baked breads and sweets. Her grandfather, originally from Lake Charles, Louisiana, led the family in collecting crawdads in the Central Valley's canal systems.
We go out and harvest huge trash cans full of crawdads and do a big crawdad boil.
And the Desjardins would hunt the wild ducks drawn to the farm's rice paddies.
I can remember always walking to the kitchen, the smell of wild ducks cooking and like stewed like red wine sauce.
Everyone in her family cooked.
It was just, you know, it was part of the fabric of our family.
So Thanksgiving was and is a big deal.
Let me check it. Looks pretty good. Smells good.
This is my first taste of stuffing with duck gizzards.
Mmm.
Delicious, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, it just tastes like duck fat. Nothing wrong with that.
Desjardins dropped out of college at age 17 to cook professionally. And she jokes that she did 2 tours of duty in notoriously tough French kitchens. But this might comfort home cooks out there. She says she always burns bread, and she passes gravy-making duty on to her mom.
When she's not with me on Thanksgiving, I have to make the gravy, and I hate it. I really don't know how civilians pull Thanksgiving off. I feel for y'all out there.
Desjardins' childhood Thanksgivings meant all hands on deck.
Traditionally, my family made a 4 or 5 day affair out of Thanksgiving.
The family cooked whole animals outdoors, leaving the indoor kitchen for everything else. These days, Desjardins still puts turkey on the grill as friends and family gather in Sonoma County. And side dishes from her childhood reappear, though some, like Brussels sprouts, have evolved.
I wasn't very fond of Brussels sprouts when I was a kid, and I absolutely adore them now.
These are pan-roasted, finished in browned butter with whole grain mustard and sherry. The one dish Desjardins doesn't change at all is her grandmother's consommé rice, starting with the short grain white rice her family grew.
I'm browning it in whole butter, so it's getting nice and toasty. It has kind of a nutty, aromatic smell right now.
Then a liquid combination of water and Campbell's beef consommé.
Put the liquid in and bring it up to a boil. And then turn it all the way down and cover it and let it cook for 20 minutes. And don't take the lid off while it's cooking. As if you really need one more starch for your Thanksgiving dinner. But this was just one of those things that we couldn't do without. Okay, I'm going to make you a plate.
As we sit at the little table in her kitchen, eating the stuffing, Brussels sprouts, consommé rice, and a bright salad of fall fruits, frisée, and watercress, it's clear. Desjardins made 4 dishes, not just because she's an overachiever, but because all of these flavors work together on the plate.
The Brussels sprouts, right?
They're great. Desjardins says her Thanksgivings in Sonoma County look a lot like those she had in the Central Valley.
The spirit of this, you know, Thanksgiving out in the country is very much like how I grew up. You eat leftovers and you go for long walks. And last year we foraged for mushrooms the day after. And, you know, and the quality of time that you spend together. And, you know, it's 4 days of hanging out and eating. What's better than that? For me, that's really kind of what Thanksgiving's about.
Next week, years of the finest culinary experience and family tradition will come together on Tracy Desjardins' Thanksgiving table. For the California Report, I'm Lisa Morehouse in San Francisco.
If you want to take a crack at recreating Tracy Desjardins' recipes, we've got them, along with photos of the chef in her home kitchen, on our website, californiareport.org. Now, whether or not you enjoy eating them, you have to admit that persimmons are pretty awesome to look at. And the exotic-looking orange fruit has a special history going back more than 100 years, when Japanese farmers first settled in California. It's not so easy to maintain that tradition, given the way farming has changed over the years, but there are still a handful of families hanging on to the old ways. The California Report's Rachel Miro profiles one of them.
Oto Orchard sits on 20 sunny acres in Granite Bay, tucked in what is now a suburb east of Sacramento. Tosh Kuratomi leads a pack of preschoolers on an orchard tour. He tells the pint-sized visitors that of the 9 varieties of persimmon his family grows here, his favorite are the maru, or chocolate persimmons. Kuratomi reaches into one likely-looking tree to grab a round fruit the size of a tangerine.
You see how the skin is? Okay, and you see how it's starting to get brown? So this nice orange fruit is starting to show brown, almost like bruises, but that's the flesh inside is brown. If anyone wants to take a bite.
Oh, that's, you guys, that's to die for. It is so delicious.
And with that enthusiastic endorsement from group leader Debbie Doss of Folsom American River Montessori, everybody's hands are out for a sample.
It's called chocolate persimmon. Because the inside is brown.
Yeah. Thank you.
The maru is as delicious as Debbie Doss says it is, juicy and sweet without being cloying. Now, most of us are familiar with 2 kinds of persimmon, the apple-sized crunchy fuyu and the bulbous hachia, best enjoyed when it's so ripe it's gooey. The maru are treasured in Japan, but they never took off commercially here because the fruit doesn't always ripen all the way through.
If it's yellow, eat the brown part, okay? Because the yellow part will make your mouth feel funny.
Okay.
Growing unusual persnickety fruit is not a recipe for financial success. Oto Orchard lost money last year. Even in good years, they make about $10,000. Kuratomi and his wife, Chris, can afford to farm because they're retired with pensions from Sacramento Unified.
maybe we didn't make a $40,000 or $50,000 salary, but we did make it pay for itself. And we said since we had retirement, then that was our main goal.
Their children also work other jobs when they're not helping out at the orchard because their retirement funds will make it possible for them to keep the tradition going when Tosh and Chris can't. The grandkids help out on the weekend. Even Helen, Chris's 96-year-old mother, helps, stringing up Hachia persimmons to dry while her beagle Mocha keeps watch. Later, the persimmons will be massaged to draw out the sugar once a week for 4 or 5 weeks. The process is painstaking, and the result is somewhat of an acquired taste for Americans.
Well, we say, well, it's like a date, but actually it doesn't taste like a date. It's really different.
It's estimated only half a dozen farms in California still make what's called hoshigaki. Helen's father purchased this land back in 1911. When you consider that Japanese families across California were kicked off their land and sent to internment camps in World War II, it's no small feat this orchard is still standing. Helen's family worked while they were interns so they could keep up with the property taxes on the farm.
We hang in there. We figure the trees will hang in there. I guess a lot of it is tradition. When your family does something and has a business, you kind of hate to see it go away.
Judging from the bustle in the farm's shop, local fruit lovers want the orchard to stick around too. Chris Kuratomi works the register. When asked how she cooks with persimmons, she says there's no need to fuss with what Mother Nature made perfect.
I just eat them out of hand. That's the best way.
Word has gotten out about Oto, thanks in part to people like David Karp, the farmer's market writer for the Los Angeles Times. Karp canvassed the state a few years back on a quest for unusual persimmon varieties, like the chocolate. He visited Japanese family farms from San Diego County to the Sierra foothills. A trip to Oto Orchard was inevitable.
And Tosh Kuratomi greeted me at the door and he said, "I always knew you'd find your way here someday."
If you're within striking distance of Sacramento, the farm shop is open 6 days a week. But don't wait too long. The persimmon season only lasts through December. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro in Granite Bay.
Chris Oto Kuratomi has given us her recipe for persimmon date bars. Look for the link at californiareport.org. It's ironic that a state with so much wealth and agricultural bounty as California also has so much hunger. For that reason, a new calculation of census data this week was almost shocking. It found that nearly a quarter of Californians live in poverty, by far the highest rate of any state. That comes as no surprise to food banks. They're full of people in need, even in places you might not expect. Reporter Rachel Dornhelm caught up with one resident in the Marin County city of Fairfax to learn more.
Just down the street from Tony Cafe's serving weekend brunch, about a dozen people are setting up tables in a church courtyard. Underneath red-tinged maple leaves, Mike Wilson describes food piled up on tables.
Tomatoes and more produce at the very back. Carrots, pasta, marinara sauce, and green beans there.
People are walking around, filling canvas bags and boxes with apples, squash, and pears. It looks like a farmer's market, but it's actually a food pantry stocked by the San Francisco and Marin Food Bank.
There are some agencies that will put a bag together and give you the bag. It's just a different approach here. Again, I think the idea behind the empowerment is just to try to help implement or preserve some dignity for people as well. Good morning. How you doing?
Hi. Wilson starts handing out the cartons of eggs from the table he is supervising. With every dozen, he throws in a smile and sometimes a recipe.
A quiche for dinner tomorrow, egg salad sandwich over the week. You're good to go.
It's not just poor folks here.
Fairfax contractor Brian Glenn is one of the people picking up food on this day.
If you look around, what you see here is the middle class trying to make ends meet. I'm a California contractor, and since 2008, there has been no work. So this really is helping our family get through the tough times.
Glenn says his son, also a contractor, moved back in with him. He'd never been to a food pantry before this one opened a year and a half ago.
Seriously, it really, really makes a difference. It makes it so I can afford to get gas so that I can go and pass out my pamphlets and create some more work. I try to not come here if I can because I know there are other people that are doing poorly as well. So if I have a job, that I don't come here. But it's been thin.
I heard similar stories from a nurse, a family subsisting on an hourly wage, a child care provider, and from volunteer Mike Wilson.
So what are you doing now?
I'm getting my own groceries. We have our own family to provide for as well.
He takes stock of the bag he's packed up.
So I've got my pasta, I've got my eggs, a head of green cauliflower.
As we leave the food tables, Wilson invites me back to his home for dinner later in the week. He lives on the campus of the seminary he attends in Marin. He and his wife, Kathleen, left jobs in the Central Valley for this career change. Back at home, Mike Wilson chops the green cauliflower he got at the food bank. His wife says she's a more traditional cook.
He's more gourmet.
I'm a little more MacGyver.
While her husband cooks, Kathleen Wilson talks about how even careful financial planning for his career in the ministry couldn't keep up with the reality of their lives now.
It's just a little humbling, you know, to be on one end at one point in your life of donating all the time, and then at the other end where we could use some of that. We also, you know, we volunteer at the food bank, and that's very important to us. To be giving still.
She says the cost of living in Marin was much higher than they anticipated. The job she found is part-time. And unexpectedly, they became guardians of their granddaughter.
Receiving the food has been very helpful. It really does help supplement. You know, some of the things that we receive really carry us to the next week.
Soon, the unmistakable smell of sautéed chicken fills the room, and the couple calls their granddaughter to join them for dinner. Before they sit down, they join hands and say grace.
And as we enjoy blessings, let us be a blessing to others, whether it's a smile or a hug or simply opening a door, just a very basic act of kindness.
After the prayer, they dig into food and conversation. Kathleen Wilson says food is something many people take for granted. She says she did. And it's a revelation to come to a time in your life when you really are thankful that it's available. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Dornhelm.
The centerpiece of most Thanksgiving dinners will be a white broad-breasted turkey. But some will partake in another bird with a delicious flavor that's making a comeback, the heritage turkey. Our Central Valley Bureau reporter Alice Daniel talks to two California family farmers who sell these original breeds of domestic turkeys.
Are you going to talk right now? You going to gobble? Oh, you're being shy.
Mary Pittman looks down at a gaggle of heritage turkeys. They look back. Pittman talks, the turkeys don't.
Why are you all being so quiet? Usually by now you're gobbling in unison. Come on.
These are the turkeys you traced from your hand as a kid for Thanksgiving. They've got long, sturdy legs, larger thighs, and smaller breast. Their feathers are colorful and iridescent. Not long ago, they were in danger of extinction.
Come on, what are we going to do? There you go.
The birds strut on the Pittman Ranch near the little town of Orange Cove in the San Joaquin Valley. Close by, the flatness of this land rolls into grassy hills that eventually touch the Sierra Nevada. The birds fit right into the landscape, just like their ancestor, the wild turkey.
They're very friendly. They're not afraid of you. They just have a totally, I think, a very outgoing personality.
Pittman knows her poultry. She runs the company Mary's Turkeys with her husband and two of their sons. By raising and selling thousands of these birds for Thanksgiving and Christmas, they are helping preserve America's original breeds, active birds that still run, fly, and socialize.
There's few that are more sociable than others, others that are kind of aloof, flying up in the tree.
They're beautiful to watch flying. They spread their wings, and they're just gorgeous.
The company operates in 20-hour days this time of year and also sells other free-range birds, like the organic white broad-breasted turkeys. In fact, Pittman has a photograph in her office taken by Life magazine in 1957. It's a picture of her father-in-law standing among a flock of those broad-breasted fowl.
Americans used to complain back in the 50s of the little pin feathers. So they wanted more breast meat, and so that's when the crossbreeding began.
The broad-breasted birds are raised for one reason, to be eaten. They've lost their ability to survive in nature. They can't breed on their own or run or fly, and can barely walk toward the end of their very short lives. They don't even have the sense to get out of the rain, Pittman says.
Because they will look up and they will drown themselves. So no, they're not very intelligent, just like they tell you.
On the other hand, the heritage birds know how to interact with their environment. And they breed naturally, something evident on the farm that day.
Well, we're making turkeys. Like I said, they still breed naturally. I'm sorry, they're not very shy, are they?
Bill Nyman's family farm, Bean Ranch, is the other large supplier of heritage turkeys in California. The farm is in Bolinas, but today Nyman is in Richmond at a cold storage facility where turkeys are being weighed for shipment.
These are turkeys that arrived here yesterday. That's an 1197 on the heritage.
Nyman says he and his wife wanted to reestablish breeding flocks of poultry on the rural landscape, the way farms in Marin County used to be. He likens the birds to another barnyard creature.
They're similar to pigs in that they're just really interesting in how they relate to each other, how they relate to their environment, and they're just alive and vibrant.
But as gentle as they are with humans, they will viciously kill a bird that appears deviant in some way.
Paradoxically, they're the cruelest animals to each other that I've witnessed in the barnyard. They'll just kill that animal and eat it for some reason. And once they start that process, it's not unlike sharks in a feeding frenzy.
Back at the Pittman Farm in the San Joaquin Valley, the birds are anything but frenzied as the sun hits the grassy hills with a last brush of light. Again, Mary Pittman.
They're getting tired. It's the end of the day. You see how they're going back underneath the shelter? They probably also sense that it's going to start raining.
And these birds know what to do. Seek cover in groups or roost in the trees above the land, watching as Pittman starts her car and drives away. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in the San Joaquin Valley.
Well, you know what comes at the end of Thanksgiving dinner, right? Dessert. More specifically, pie. Whether your favorite is pumpkin, pecan, or apple, most pie fans say what really matters is the crust. The California Report's resident baker, Susie Racho, visited a San Francisco pie maker who's using a family recipe to grow her business.
Pituitary pie. You're such a tasty hunk of pastry, me oh my.
Gotta light the oven.
Pie has inspired songs, books, and works of art. But did you know that the saying easy as pie doesn't refer to the making of pie, but the eating of it? Anyone who's ever made pie knows this from experience, like baker Issa Jan Brown.
So you'll notice, like, the flour looks slightly moistened because...
Jan Brown is showing me how she makes her pie crust. There's no mixer or food processor involved, just her hands, a recipe from Mom, and lots of butter.
I'm a fan of using all butter, which makes it even more challenging to get it to be consistent. I just don't like the idea of using shortening. I don't like the idea of using foods that are not very natural. Butter is oh so tasty all on its own.
Butter Love Bake Shop, Jan Brown's very small business, doesn't have a storefront. She rents the kitchen here at Pig and Pie, a restaurant on 24th Street in San Francisco's Mission District. The restaurant is closed, so it's relatively quiet, except for the hum of the kitchen's refrigerators and fans. She works 6 days a week, selling wholesale to cafes, restaurants, and food trucks, and takes retail orders online.
So do cranberries and then add a little bit of orange zest.
I decided on pie because it was one of my favorite things to eat. It's what my mom always made, and I couldn't find a good piece of pie in the city. So, like, if I was in the mood for a slice of pie, I'd have to make it, or I'd have to have my mom make it for me.
Just a few years ago, Jan Brown had an office job after working in restaurants since her teens. But she says she was missing being creative and began moonlighting, taking special orders making cakes and pies. Word got around, and reviews started appearing on Yelp.
I would get off of work, run home, go pick my daughter up from preschool, feed her dinner, get her to bed, and at 9 o'clock I'd start baking, and I'd bake until 1 a.m. Then I would go to sleep and get up at 7 and go to work. My husband was like, you are 7 months pregnant. You need to stop. Like, this is an obsession. You don't need to have this second job. I was like, but this is the one I like.
Soon after, Jan Brown was laid off from her data processing job. She spent a few months contemplating starting her own business, and then she got a call from the New York Times for an article about pie makers shortly before Thanksgiving 2010. She quickly went legit, getting a business license and renting space in a commercial kitchen.
All of a sudden, I was inundated with hundreds of emails about orders for Thanksgiving, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not set up for this. But that was sort of the start of it being a real business.
The pie shell is in the refrigerator.
This morning, she's prepping an order of bacon pecan pies.
Oh, you want to add grapes to it?
The crust that local critics rave about isn't made with any secret ingredients like vodka. It's all in the technique.
Work your butter into your flour. Everyone always uses the pea-sized pieces as a reference. I actually prefer the pieces to be larger but flatter. So I like, you know, like a leaf of butter. And touch the butter once. Coat it with the flour, then squish it. Then once you add your water, work quickly and don't mess with it too much.
As the baking winds down for the morning and prep for the next day begins, Butter Love's accounts start picking up their orders. Jason Angeles from the frozen custard food truck stops by to pick up an order of muffin-sized pies that Lisa Jan Brown calls cuppies.
We do pie parfaits. We split her pies in half, put a scoop of custard, and then top it off with burnt caramel. I mean, it's like an evil, wonderful thing you can have.
Even though she'll be making pies for many folks this season, at her own Thanksgiving dinner, she'll be leaving the baking to Mom.
Pituity pie.
Pituity pie. For the California Report, I'm Susie Rocho in San Francisco.
Kiss me, oh my pituity pie.
And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. You can always find us online at californiareport.org or at facebook.com/thecaliforniareport. Our director is Susie Rocho. The engineer today is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman and Danny Bringer. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Polly Stryker was a contributing editor. Our associate senior producer is Victoria Maleone. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California, and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com.